Okay, it's time to introduce the speaker. The committee looked over a couple of potential speakers, and they were all great. Okay, they settled on a guy who's quite colorful, right? And you know, I've been able to spend time with him over the years. And I know he has a message of recovery, so I'm going to let him tell it to you. These days he's known as Pumpkin Man, by the way, just like you know that. And I'll give you CJ. Yeah!
I'm an addict. My name's CJ. And I thank the East Coast Committee. And, you know, I tell you, could everybody on the East Coast Committee that served this weekend, could you all stand up so we can let you know? You all rock, man. It was good. You know, I'm as nervous as the first time I had sex. But there wasn't 200 people here, you know? I was by myself. I wanted to make sure we all could relate, you know? But, you know, I'm going to start off before I forget. This convention really is really dear to my heart. And when it disbanded after 92, there was a few of us. It never gained any traction, but we tried to talked about bringing the convention back. And there was a guy named Curtis B. From my area, the northeast area of New Jersey, where I got clean. And then there was another guy named Billy from Philly. Some of you know him as Billy the Roofer. And, you know, we tried, but it never got any traction. So in November of 2007, I had moved to Florida. And I'm greeted by a guy named Vito. And Vito says, "Hey, CJ, we're thinking about possibly bringing back the East Coast Convention. Would you like to be involved?" I said, "Oh yeah." I said, "Curtis, you know, Billy, oh, you know, we've always been wanting to bring this thing back." And he says, "Well, we're gonna bring it back if we can find the banners." He said, "I think I know where the banners are, but we have to, if we find the old banners, that's telling us that we need to bring this back." And about a month later, he comes back and he says, "We found the banners." And we all knew that where they were. They were at Danny's house. If you want any memorabilia, it's at Danny's house, you know? And so we decided to bring it back. And there's only probably three people that know this story that are still involved in this, and that's myself, Tom, and Patty. And what happened is we all got together and we met at, I think it was T.Y. Park in Florida, and we got there and we formulated a committee, and all of a sudden, we make up flyers, and I'm handing the flyers out and passing them out and putting them on all the chairs for, you know, before the meeting. I'm like promoting, and they're all in the garbage. And I'm like, "Why are they in the garbage?" And I keep putting them out, and they keep putting them in the garbage, and they ripping them up. And I said, "Why are you guys throwing them in the garbage?" And they said, well, you guys aren't responsible to anybody. You're just a renegade startup thing. And I didn't know any better, you know, and I just wanted to be involved with this thing. And we had started to put on this thing called the Dinosaur Day. They made me the fundraiser. So I had this thing all for years wanted to do. It was called the Dinosaur Day. And we had 9 speakers that all had 35 years. This is 2008. 9 speakers that had 35 years or more. And Fawn only had 31 years at the time because we wanted to hear about Jimmy Kay and the involvement, you know, with this dinosaur thing. And so we got Tom Catton from Hawaii, we got Gene Haig from Oregon, Sylvia from San Francisco, Bob Barrett from LA, Gino from Texas, Neil from South Carolina, Bo from Georgia, Dutch from Jersey, and Fawn. And those were the speakers we had, but they kept throwing them in. So finally we got involved with I think North Dade is where we agreed that we were gonna have it. And so from the North Dade, no one showed up at the subcommittee at area service. So now they started throwing the flyers back in there. And so all of a sudden we put the event on and nobody shows up from our area. But what had happened was all the people that made all the early ones, the people especially from Pittsburgh, they came and they came as dinosaur, and all the people that really experienced what happened in the 80s and early 90s were there to experience this. And they came to this dinosaur day and they wanted to keep this thing alive. And after that we had a meeting, and I had just moved down there and I didn't want to be involved anymore because it seemed like everybody was like calling me a renegade because I was going against what they thought was right. So we're having a meeting and I said, y'all trying to put a square peg in a round hole, and I'm just not going to be a part of this because I don't want to be a salmon, you know. I want to go with the current, you know. And Tom stood up and says, "That's your opinion." And I was like, "Hey, yeah, exactly. It's yours too." And so, end of story. The committee finally went to the West Coast, and all the people that were involved that had the service committees, they got formed their own. And Patty and Tom, thanks to them, the East Coast. So we really deserve both of them guys a hand. Yeah. So, I guess I'll tell you a little bit about me and how I got to where I am. You know, it was, you know, I'll be real quick with this. I'll try to get as fast as through as possible as I can, but I think it's important. My childhood, I have epilepsy. In my childhood, I was in institutions and hospitals where you all got to play with kids and everything. I didn't get to go out and play with kids because I was in hospitals and institutions. And I used to have my face against the window pane. And I said, please, man, I can't wait to go out and play with the kids. I just want to be one of you. I just want to be a part of something, man. And I was so left out, because when I was out, people didn't want to hang with me because I was the freak child, have seizures all the time. And sports is what I excelled in. You know, something I could do by myself. And I became a good basketball player and baseball player. And, you know, just didn't fit in with those guys. And all of a sudden I started walking on the other side of the street in the late 60s, you know, with the hippies. And I got high with them, and I felt a part of something for once in my life, you know. I had nowhere, no one acceptance, and all of a sudden when I used, y'all accepted me, and it seemed like the crazier the shit I did, the more you loved me, you know? And my story went, and I left school when I was 13, and it started hitchhiking around the country, and for 15 years I hitchhiked around the country with the Allman Brothers, the Grateful Dead, Lynyrd Skynyrd, you know, all the old school bands, you know? It was like a very freeing time. You know, and yeah, wow, look at me, Ma. I'm in a college, I'm in a dorm. Go figure, hey? Yeah, from the storms to the dorms. Hey, yeah, so you know, life was pretty good, sex, drugs, rock and roll, you know, hey. You know, and then all of a sudden my friends say, hey, come on, we're going into the Lower East Side of New York, come with us. And I took a ride in with them in the late 70s, and I didn't come out till the late 80s. It brought me to selling my ass on the corner, living in a 4x4 block radius, and you know, my abandoned dominium was on 9th Street in between C and D in the Lower East Side. If any of you remember, it was Tent City. All in between 8th and 9th and C and D. And I was 129 pounds. I could windsurf on a Dorito. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, this guy, we were in there, and I said to him, man, I can't do this anymore. And he said, I know a good place for you to go. I heard the message in a shooting gallery. He said, I know a good place for you to go. It's Narcotics Anonymous. Now, here I am. I didn't want nobody to know I was an addict. So I had to go to a meeting where no one would know me, you know? And I went in. It was all black. It was in East Orange, New Jersey. Mike knows it. And it was a guy named Normel. He had no legs. And it was another guy named Jim P. They called him Pops. And these guys were high-fiving each other. God is good all the time. And it was like being in a Southern Baptist. And they just had this spirit, this joy, this happiness, this gift about them. You could tell they had a spiritual awakening, but I was spiritually dead. I was physically, mentally, and I left that meeting, and I just started crying because I knew that I could never have that peace, that happiness, that joy that these cats had. But it was their smiles that brought me back to Narcotics Anonymous. And when I came back, I went to Burnett Junior High School. I walked into a meeting, and I raised my hand, and I said, I need help. And it was about 20, 25 people in that meeting, and they all got in the line, and they all hugged me, and they said, keep coming back. And they said all wonderful things to me. You know, you never have to use again. And after the meeting, they said, we're going to the diner. And I said, I don't have any money. They said, we didn't ask you if you had any money. We asked you to come to the diner. And so they bought me a cheeseburger deluxe. And after picking crust out of the garbage can, that was like a Philly mignon steak to me. And I said, how can I ever, ever, ever repay you? And they said, when you're able to, do for someone else what was done for you. And I always say, this is the most expensive fucking hamburger I ever had. But it got me to come back to my second meeting. And that's where I got the evidence. That's where I got the hit. And all of a sudden, I get there just a little bit late, and they're doing clean time countdown. And they said, does anybody have multiples year clean? And there was this girl named Trish R. And she walked across. And Trish R. was the same girl in the same shooting gallery I was in the Lower East Side. And there she was celebrating 2 years clean. She was my evidence. She was my hope. And there she was, and she said, CJ, I'm going to pick you up. I'm going to take you to meetings. I'm going to tap you into this program, and you're going to learn everything you need to know in these next 2 weeks and everything. And that's what she did. She plugged me in. And I know some of you maybe are saying, I thought it's the men with the men, women with the women. But the book that I read talks about it's the therapeutic value of one act helping another is without parallel. And what she did was she tapped me into this program. She got me, I don't know if it was 7 commitments in 6 days or 7 home groups. And it was either 7 and 6 home group and commitments. But I didn't know any better, and I just didn't want to return back to the hell I was living. You know, I just didn't want to go to the Lower East Side, and I got involved with all these people, and I couldn't have gotten more involved. There was these people, I'm not going to mention names. I mentioned one, I got to mention a lot, you know, but the Northeast area was so tight, and we were together. We had 50 people going to the diner, right? Come on, Mike. 50, 100 people in the diner. Midas Touch Diner on Friday nights. Afterwards, we'd all go over to what they call the Howl Club or St. Mark's. And that was like the mecca of recovery. It was the old Electric Circus where Jimi Hendrix used to play. And now they made it a recovery place. And every weekend there would be 1,000, 2,000 people come in and out of the place. And it was exciting. It was exciting. And that's what I needed. I needed to know that you could have fun in Narcotics Anonymous. That's why it saddens me a lot of times where I ask people, come on, let's go to a meeting in Fort Myers if I'm in Fort Lauderdale. Let's do a road trip. And they're like, what do you mean a road trip? I got a meeting a mile away from my house. I ain't going nowhere. But I just loved it. You take a newcomer with you. And it's not so much the meeting, it's the ride to the place and coming back. You know, it was exciting for me. You know, when I started branching out and going to Philadelphia and going at me and Larry Liz hooked up, man, and we've been lifelong friends and everything. We both got clean in 88, February, and, you know, we did so much together, you know, and the conventions and all that. But, you know, Narcotics Anonymous has given me everything in my life, everything I have. The steps have been able to heal this fractured spirit inside. I was hurting, I was crumbling inside. And y'all gave me the remedy. It's called the 12 steps. And I needed to do a surgery of my spirit. And what I did was I used the steps to heal myself from a lot of things and actually, you know, let me give you an example. I'm clean a few years, and this cat comes into Jersey. I meet him, and I'm like the meeting guy, you know. I'll pick anybody up, take them to a meeting, you know. And so this guy, Ronnie G. from San Diego, comes into town. We become great friends. He actually became my sponsor for 20 years. And he's out in his garage. I'm out visiting him in San Diego. And he's having his 45-minute workout. He's huffing away. I'm huffing away. He's doing his workout. And he comes next to me, and he goes, 45-minute workout. I go, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 cigarette butts in 45 minutes. You ever think about giving them things up? I said, dude, I think about a lot of things. That ain't one of them. I always say we get the monkey off our back, but the circus is still in town, you know? And he said, no, seriously, CJ, you know, you had a distorted perception of the truth. And I said, what do you mean, Ronnie? And he said, CJ, you thought there was no life after drugs, and it was only after you gave up drugs you began to live. You need to have faith and trust and the love and power to come into your life and remove the obsessions for you to use, can come into your life and remove the obsession for you to stop smoking. And he put his hand on my shoulder and said, I'll say a prayer for you. And I turned the corner and lit a cigarette. But when I woke up the next day, and this is my first step, is what we get honest with whatever's making our lives unmanageable, because addiction manifests itself in many different areas of our lives. And when we get honest with what's making our lives unmanageable, whether it's cigarettes, gambling, sugar, porn, whatever it may be at that time, and you get that awareness and that time, that surrender, that beating where you're tired, you know, and then you become willing and accept it and believe in a power greater than yourself that can restore you to sanity. You see, if I act the way I always act, I'm going to get what I always got. If I get what I always got, I'm going to feel the way I always felt. I don't want to feel the way I always felt, man. And, you know, after I stopped smoking, I went to the Bahamas for a convention, and actually I met Donna down there. Donna here? Oh, she went home, okay. But anyhow, I went to the Bahamas, and that's where N.A. boy met N.A. girl, you know. My three fingers used to stick with orange goo, you know, so it was rough to get in a relationship, you know. And so I got down there, I met this girl, and it was on, you know. And, oh, I forgot, man. See, when I went to St. Mark's, there was a powerful story I heard. And it was a story of when someone said something, I thought they were a real jerk off, you know. And this cat, his name was Santos. And he went to St. Mark's all the time. And he'd always say, "Only fucking punk shoes." And I'd be like, "This guy's a jerk." And he'd always, every meeting, "Only fucking punk shoes." And I said, "Damn." So at one meeting, I go up to him and I say, "Santos, man, isn't this program about love?" And he says, "Yeah." I said, "Why you say only punk shoes?" He said, "Listen, motherfucker." He said, "It takes a lot of courage to walk through feelings. Only punk shoes." And he turned around and walked away. And I said, "He's a fucking jerk off." So now I'm with this girl, and we all chilling, you know. It's on. She comes to me 1 week. She's D.C. I'm Jersey. She comes to me 1 week, and I go to her. It's like, you know. And then Christmas is coming. And so I got us a nice trip to Hawaii. And so we go there, and we get in an argument, and she leaves me for the taxi driver. You can laugh, it's hysterical. But at the time, it wasn't hysterical. And all I could hear was only fucking punk shoes. And you see, there's gonna be times where it's only gonna be you, your higher power, and what you gonna do, motherfucker? You know, what you gonna do? And you know, we're given tools. And when we go through something, we're told to call our sponsor. If we don't get our sponsor, call our support group. And that's what I did. And I didn't have to use. And from there, you know, these NA girls are crazy, man. I'm going to AA dances. The grass is greener on the other side. So I go and I meet this wonderful girl. Oh, man. Probably the most wonderful, beautiful thing I ever met in my life, you know? And, you know, we're together about a year, and we met in this place called Long Beach Island, New Jersey. And we go down there on our anniversary 1 year, and she tells me that she's pregnant. And I'm gonna be a daddy. And I'm high-fiving every, I'm gonna be a daddy. I'm all excited, you know? And we go look at houses. And 3 days later, I put down an offer on a house to buy it. And then 3 days after that, she comes back and says she got rid of the kid on me. And I tell you, they don't say this saying much anymore. But they used to say, when your ass falls off, put your ass in the bag and bring the bag to a meeting. And that's literally what I did that day. And when I heard that news, all I could hear was that guy from St. Mark's, only fucking punk shoes. And I got to a meeting, and I didn't have to use, you know? It ain't all butterflies and rainbows in here. Life on life's terms happens to us all, but we're given tools, and we're given a fellowship of people, men and women that care about us. And that's why it's so important to build our support groups and everything, because when the storm comes, you know, they're there for us. They can love us until we can love ourselves again. And, you know, but what it talks about, in the third step, it talks about we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. And the 11th step, it talks about that God's will and our will become one in an intuitive manner. And how do we get there? We get there by making that decision in the third step to do a fourth step. But see, I didn't have a God of my understanding. See, the higher power was cool. I could get with higher power. All that power had to do was be loving, caring, or greater than ourselves. And the group was my higher power. But when it got here, and my sponsor saw, he said, "What's up? You acting funny lately." And I said, "Well, you people seem to have this higher God, and I don't have one." And he said, he points to this paragraph in the third step. It says, we need to be honest about our belief if we are to grow spiritually. And he says, CJ, do you believe it's God's will for you to work the 12 steps in Narcotics Anonymous? I said, without a doubt. Then make a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of Narcotics Anonymous, and he'll reveal himself somewhere else down the line. And that's what I did. And, you know, I did the greatest thing you could do for yourself. It's a fourth step. And I wrote about the, and this is what I love about Narcotics Anonymous. Where else can you come and hear the answer without asking the question? I remember sitting in a meeting, and in that meeting, somebody sat up here and said that they were molested. And when they said they were molested, it was like the whole world. I was like, oh, somebody else? I'm not the only one? My whole life, I thought I was the only one. And it gave me the courage to talk about these things, because we need to get that stuff up and out of us so more higher power can come into us. And I had to talk about a guy putting a gun to my head and raping me. I had to talk about the molestation that happened as a child. You know, but that was the first and second four step. I talked about poor me and the molestation. But in the third step, as we really uncover and unravel and get closer to the exact nature, that's why a one four step isn't good enough in my case. In the third four step, I got in touch with, why did I keep walking by his house and not the other way? It's because I liked it. And I had to get to the truth that maybe I was molested the first time, but I kept going back for more and more. I could have went that way to get to the store, but I walked that way. So getting to the exact man, but anyhow, so I wrote on all that stuff, and I wrote on how I was not there for my mother. 8 days she was in the hospital, and I wasn't there once. And in the fifth step, it was, I got in top. Hold on. And in the fifth step, I got in touch with it. It was all revolved around self-centered fear, either losing something I think I have or not getting what I think I want. And in the sixth step, what my sponsor had me do, he had me write on all my defects of character and how it manifested in my life. And in the seventh step, he had me write the opposite of the defect. But then he had me write how my life would be like without that defect in my life. And that's where I started to really springboard into the hope and the solution. I mean, even though we talk about living in the solution, this gave me the hope, because I got the fourth step as a blueprint. You know, it lays out your whole sixth and eighth step. So I got in touch with all that and all the things I needed to do. And I took that newfound humility and I went to a meeting. And this guy, his name was Spanky. And he said, isn't it amazing how we can hug the slimiest, grimiest people when they come walking in the door, but we can't go home and hug our mothers? Oh, it hit me right between the eye. And so I went home and I hugged my mother that night. And hugging my mother was like hugging a guy out of prison at his first NA meeting that doesn't want to be hugged. She didn't hug back. And I'm like, Ronnie, my own damn mother wouldn't hug me. And he chuckles like a sponsor does, because you know the wisdom's coming next. And he said, CJ, did you ever hug your mother before? And I said, no. He said, how was it like when we hugged you the first time? It was quite awkward. He said, I suggest you hug your mother for 90 days. where we hear that, right? So I started hugging my mother every day. And every day I started hugging my mother. And all of a sudden she started to hug back. She loosened up. You could feel it coming down. And then my mother worked for me. And everybody that came into my store had to hug my mother. She became a huggy bear after 30 days. And then my whole Johnson family hugs due to Narcotics Anonymous. Because we take what we learn in here in the hour or hour and a half group conscious meeting, and then we go out and practice it into the battlefield of life. And you've given me so much to give back to the battlefield of life and try to make a difference in not only my family's life, my life, my family's life, and others. You know, I'm so grateful for that. And so right there, my sponsor said, all right, well, now you're on the A step. He said, all right, and we know Ma's on the list. He said, make a game plan. What are you going to do to make it right? It ain't about saying I'm sorry. You've been sorry all your life. You know, let's make a game plan. So he let me make the game plan. So I said, well, on Sunday, we'll watch Touch My Angel. And on Tuesday, we'll watch the Knicks or the Yankees, because that's what she liked. And I said, I'll bring dinner home so she doesn't have to cook. And we'll break bread and I'll start to mend the relationship that I had torn by through my actions. And he said, I love it. And so I started doing that. And I'm not, in the beginning when I did, I want to tell you how spiritual I loved it. All I kept thinking about in the beginning, early on, I'm watching the game, and I was like, boy, I wonder what everybody's doing in the diner. You know, there's like 50 guys and the people I go with all the time. It's just like, but I needed to stay vigilant and I needed to mend that relationship. And after a while, I didn't care what they were doing in the diner. I loved hanging with my mom, you know? And after doing that for about a year and a half, my mother got diagnosed with cancer. And I'm so, so blessed because I had somebody to be able to run my business. And she always thought nobody would ever be there for her, you know? And now I was able to be by her side every second of her life till she died. And I spent the last 4.5 months by her side. I laid in bed with her and I rubbed her bald head and I did all the things that you all taught me to do to be the best son that I could be. And this is my greatest moment in Narcotics Anonymous. I'm sitting there and I'm rubbing my mother's bald head like she likes. And her friend Eileen comes walking in and she says, hi, Eileen. And she says, hi, honey. My mother was so sweet, they called her honey, you know? And she never said a bad word about anybody and never swore in her life. And she said, and my mother said, you know, Eileen, remember all those talks about how our sons would never be there for us? And the lady put her head down in shame. And my mother said, no, no, no. And she looked up at me and she says, don't worry. Your son will be there just like mine's there for me. And so it's times where you feel God the amends and my gratitude for Narcotics Anonymous. Y'all taught me to be the son my mother always wanted. You keep teaching me to be the person my higher power wants me to be. I can never, ever thank you for the moments that you've given me with my family and with others. I can't never give back enough. And that's why I try to keep giving and giving and being involved in this program. You know, lately, you know, since I'm talking about my family, I hope I don't get lost after this, but I better do this here. So my brother, I gave him my business, you know. People always say, why, when you die, you give something to somebody. I said, why don't you give it to them when they're alive so they can watch them enjoy it? So I gave my brother my business, you know, and you know, trying all he did for me. You know, he was the best brother you could ever have. And so every time since I've been clean, I always say nothing but love. That's my, it's like my saying, I guess you could say. And everything on Facebook, nothing but love. Nothing but love. And so I would call my brother and I'd say, I love you, BJ. And he'd say, okay, have a good day. I love you, BJ. And I'd do that for first year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. I love you, BJ. I love you, BJ. I love you, BJ. And 30 years later, I love you, BJ. Okay, bye-bye, you know? And when I had 32 years, I said, I love you, BJ. And he says, I love you too, CJ. And those moments, if anybody's struggling with, maybe they don't have a child, the child, and they keep sending, I love you, send me, just keep saying it, keep doing it, be consistent, you know? And you know, now I'm watching my brother die. And it's the hardest fucking thing. Yeah, I watched my good buddy die. He's on dialysis. He's got cancer. One day he gets dialysis, the next day he gets cancer treatment, dialysis, cancer, dialysis, cancer. He can't walk. He's stuck in his bed. You want to know, powerless. There's nothing I can do. But I can tell him, I love you, BJ. I love you. It's just been hard. But let me, my mother died, right? I told you that. And I didn't deal with it very well. And I sort of went into an isolated state. And I never forget, I came back and I went to this event in Ocean City, New Jersey. And there was only four of us there. It was another couple and this guy named Dominic from Ocean City. And Dominic had just relapsed, and it was his first day back. And he was on the beach, and we were talking. And I was going through what I was going through because I had separated myself a lot from the fellowship. I stopped coming to meetings, stopped calling my sponsor, stopped taking phone calls. And I was like, I couldn't live with myself. I had like a beard. I had a hoodie. I'd go on Wawa with a hoodie on and just grab a couple canned foods and bring them back. And I was like, man, I've reverted back to the animal level. I was just like, and all of a sudden I said, you know what to do. It's just like your charger. Just like your, when your cell phone runs out of power, what do? You tap it back into the power to give you juice. And what I did was I said, all right, tap yourself into the power that gave you juice, which is Narcotics Anonymous. And that's what I did. I went to that event, and Dominic was there for one day, and he said, dude, I went through those same feelings, but I used. You don't have to. And I plugged myself back in. And so my point is, I didn't deal with the death of my mother good and the loss of a child, which are all about 2.5 years apart. And so all of a sudden I get, oh, okay, I go up there. It's early in the morning, man. I don't do mornings, people who know me. But and so you gotta follow the bouncing ball, man. There's a lot of trips, LSD trips I took, you know? So, but where was I? I just forgot now. Right. Whee! So anyhow, okay, I went to see my ex-girlfriend calls me up. I had 25 years clean at the time. She said, I just don't believe it, man. I live 4 hours north of you. I don't believe it. You got to come up here and spend the weekend with me and my husband. I said, it'd be an honor. So I drove up and spent the weekend with him, had a good time, ducked out. 2 weeks later, I get a phone call. He said, my husband's daughter overdosed. She's in the hospital. Can you come up and do what you people do? I love how earthlings say it, you know? And so I said, no, it'd be an honor. So I go up there, and as I go up there, I'm all in pain, and I'm in agony, and I get up there, and I'm like, I can't go today, maybe tomorrow. And the bathroom is from me to maybe Mike away, and I ain't got the strength to get up to go to the bathroom. I want to pee in my pants, you know? And she says, oh, no, you're going to the hospital right now. And she grabbed me, she took me to the hospital, and they did all the tests, And they said, we got to operate right now. They said, your colon is 4 to 5 times the normal size. You don't know how lucky you are to be alive. If it would have leaked or burst, you would have been dead instantly. And I just smiled and laughed. I said, no, I know how lucky I am. And so I woke up. And when I woke up, they told me I had cancer. And they told me I had a colostomy bag. They always told me I was full of shit. Now I can't deny it. And I still have it. I still have. You see a bulge on my left side? That's what I got. That's what I get dealt. Everybody gets dealt different things, baby. I got colostomy bag, and I got cancer. But in the first few days, I'm just crying. I'm just like, my father died 8 days after he got cancer. My mother died 4.5 months after she got it. It was like a death sentence to me, you know? And I'm crying for 2 days. Got 5,000 messages on Facebook, nothing but love, you know? People loving me up, man. I couldn't believe the love I got. And all of a sudden on the third day, I woke up and I was just like, I got this great quirky little relationship with my higher power. He said, you're a fucking disgrace, as I'm crying. And I said, what do you mean? He said, I blessed you with 25 years past your expiration date. You've gone places, done things, seen things most people will never ever do in their lifetime. And here you are going out like a whining little bitch. And I just started laughing. And I said, if anything ever happened to me, I wanted to go to Thailand to get healed. So I got on the next plane to Thailand, and I went there to get healed. You know, well, I mean, it was a few months later. But I went there, and I walked into a meeting. And when I walked into a meeting, I said, I'm CJ. I said, you know, many knew me and everything. And I just said, I don't know if you all know, but I got cancer, and I got to find an oncologist. Can anybody help me? And they said, oh, you got to give Jabu a call. I said, okay, give me his number. So they give me Jabu's number. I call him up. I say, hey, Jabu. He said, yeah. I said, my name's CJ. He's like, CJ, how you doing, buddy? And I'm like, do I know you? He said, I'm the South African black guy that you bought me dinner the first 4 days I was in the program. I was like, oh, shit. I said, really? I said, why the fuck they got me calling you? And he said, maybe because I'm an oncologist. So you never know the newcomer you're going to help is going to be the guy that's going to. So he took me, right? And he said, CJ, I'm in Chiang Mai. You're in Bangkok. You need the best cancer doctor in all of Asia. I do it holistically now. You need to go to the best doctor in all of Asia. This is a great story. I love this. So he said, you have to see Dr. Chula. I mean, Dr. Varro. It's Chula Hospital. You got to see Dr. Varro at Chula Hospital. So I said, all right. So I get there, and I said, okay, I want to see Dr. Varro. And they said, okay, we'll make an appointment. You got a 90-day loop. I said, no, I got to see Dr. Varro. You know, I'm an American. I don't know the rules in a Thai hospital. Once you sign in to see who you're going to see, it's a 90-day loop. So I had to wait 90 days. And they said, bring all these things with you. So I brought all the things with me, and I was missing one thing. And so they said, you got to go in for another 90-day loop. I'm like, my mother died 4.5 months, my father 8 days. I need to see somebody. And so I brought another recovering addict with me, because I've always taught, bring another recovering addict with you when you go to the doctor. And so I brought this guy, Scott. He lives in Thailand. Many of you have met him. And I took Scott with me, and he says, come on, CJ, a new Narcotics Anonymous meeting opened last week. You need to go. How many times is Narcotics Anonymous going to save my life in many different ways? You know, so we go, and it's in this place called B&H Hospital. So I go there, and I said, well, maybe I can get that test done here, and I'll just share in the meeting. So I share in the meeting my situation, and a guy comes up to me, and he says, CJ, there's a guy in here that's been helping so many people with cancer. I mean, a lady and she's been helping a lot of people with cancer. You know, if you're open to it, she can maybe help you. And so I said, sure, give me it. And so he says, I go in to see her the next day, and she says, can you come in on Sunday? And I said, sure. She said, I want you to come in on Sunday, and I want you to see Dr. Vero. And I just start laughing, and I said, that's the guy I've been trying to see at Chula Hospital. And they said, oh, you're so lucky. He donates his time once a month to this hospital. If that Narcotics Anonymous meeting hadn't have started the week before, we wouldn't have been there to see the doctor I needed to see. And, you know, today, May 22nd, it was 10 years I've been cancer-free now. So. So anybody with an illness that they think that might be life-threatening to them, there's a love and power that works and can work through great medicine and things. But I'm just a big believer in Thailand. I just love it, man. And a funny story is I went back to get a colonoscopy, this guy says, well, don't go to B&H Hospital. You can save $100 by going to St. John's Hospital. And so I said, all right, I'll save $100. It's only a colonoscopy, you know? So I go to St. John's, and they say, okay. And they say, okay, 2 weeks from now, we want you to come in, and we want you to see Dr. Vero. I start laughing, and he said, you can't make this shit up, man. And he said, he donates his time once a month to St. John's Hospital. I mean, if you don't see the evidence of a loving power working in my life, I mean, the coincidences and things that have happened in my life, you know, I was able, you know, 24 years ago, I just have a different perspective on life maybe than a lot of people. And I made a decision to sell everything I own and travel the world. And, you know, that's what I did. And I've had so many experiences now. I've been to 103 countries for Narcotics Anonymous. And my dream is to go to all 140, hopefully by World Convention, but I don't know if I'll make it then. But either way, I had so many stories. One of them, I'm in London, right? And I tell my story, and a guy comes up to me after the meeting, and he says, I think you're full of shit. And I start laughing. I said, why do you think I'm full of shit? He said, I never met a dope fiend. And you said you were a dope fiend. I never met a dope fiend that had teeth like that. I said, you too can have a good set of teeth. You know, I've been able to experience like the first Thailand convention ever. I was able to be the first member in Bangladesh from the U.S. to ever go to Bangladesh. I mean, so many priceless things. I went to South Africa. I have videos of it. And I got three lions in my arms. I'm playing with the elephant. And I mean, you're new. You got a month and a half clean, right? You just don't even know what's in store for you. The dreams, the places that you can be. You know, that's what happens in here. Lost dreams awaken. Mine was to travel. Many's are go back to school and become what you've always wanted to become. That's what happens in here. This is a miracle-making machine, you know? That's what we all are. We've been taken from the wreckage, the pits of hell. And look at us. Look at us. We're about loving, caring, and helping another person and making a difference in the lives of addicts. How precious is that? It's the greatest gift that could be given. I'm higher than a hippie all the fucking time. Why? Why? Because of where I came from. I came from all the hopelessness, and I've been given such a life. But, and I guess I'm getting near the end. I mean, I could probably tell you a couple more stories about traveling, but and I'll just end on this. It's my pumpkin story. Steve loves my pumpkin story. And it's, and so our area, the Northeast area, we have a pumpkin picking event that goes on before Halloween, right? And so when they go out to pick the pumpkin, they think of an addict who's still suffering. And Trish R. thought of me. And this is my story. And she thought of me, and she picked that pumpkin. It was dirty, it was beat up. It was, she washed me off. Then she cut me open. Then she took all the yucky stuff out. Y'all took all the yucky stuff out of it, the resentments, the angers, the fear, the hatred, all the stuff, all the yucky stuff you took out of me. And then you put a smile on my face. And then you put the light inside me so I could be the light to you. And now it's up to you to let us wash you off. It's up to us, up to you to let us cut you open. Get all that yucky stuff out of you. Put a smile on your face. Put a light in you so you can be the light to everybody. I'm a pumpkin. Are you a pumpkin? Be a pumpkin too. No, nothing but love.